Colorful Sinai and Patrick on Colorful Radio.
Welcome to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon. On today's show, we will be discussing how we can preserve the Windrush generation legacy through family and documentaries. Joining us in the studio today, we have Danielle Vassell, who is going to be talking to us about a documentary she's making and also the Derby West Indian Community Centre.
Yes.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
When did you first hear about the Windrush scandal?
It was last year, actually, because my nan had been affected.
Okay.
And I saw it all over the news, and just seeing, just, you know, my grandma's generation go back home and just didn't even get informed about it was just not right. And I just thought to myself, something needs to be done, and which is why I started working at the West Indian Centre, because they're in partnership with the Windrush Compensation Movement UK. Dr. Desmond Jadu, he's ahead of that, and he makes sure that he deals with inquiries for people like my grandma's generation and the generation below, and you know, just provide forms for them to claim back whatever they want through that compensation process, really. And it's been great so far.
Okay. Yes. I mean, how did you, the organization, Derby West Indian Community Center, how did they respond to the scandal? Like, what sort of events did they put on? Did they put on like workshops and surgeries for people to come in and get help?
Yes, we actually had a recent surgery. Dr. Desmond Jadu and Clive Foster came and they spoke to the West Indian Center and those outside in the community about who they are as a movement and what work they do. For example, like I said, they provide forms to deal with the claims and provide them with legislations and place advice about what they can do and point them in the right direction, and just answer any questions, any concerns that, you know, the elders may have had, and of course which organization may have had at the time, and how we can work in partnership with them to ensure that their claims are dealt with correctly.
Yeah, I mean, what was the response from people who came in for help? What sort of stories did you hear?
I heard stories that they had lost their money due to, you know, jobs being lost through the claims and all that other stuff, and, you know, losing their housing and being deported unnoticed as well. And they were complaining, they were not happy. I remember this lady could not express her anger in the meeting, and we had to kind of calm her down and say, look, Dr. Desmond said, look, we're going to deal with it. Just try and calm down. We're trying to answer questions as effectively as we can. You'll get sorted, don't worry. And within a week, we heard that her claims were dealt with right there and then.
Yeah, I mean, things seem to be progressing very slowly, and, you know, our elders are getting some help. But I know that you're here to discuss also that you're working on a documentary about the Windrush generation. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, so the documentary is focused on Windrush journeys. So my grandma's generation, my mum's generation, and my generation, and talk about the journeys from coming overseas to hear the struggles they had to face and the legacies they want to impart into our generation, of course my mum's generation as well, and what the message they want to send across to make sure that we stand on their shoulders and carry on that legacy. And also it's going to be focused on, from a health perspective, so how can African Caribbean elders improve their health? For example, what methods they could use for example frying fish. We can still use the same seasoning, but of course they could bake it, for example.
Yeah.
So looking at methods to make sure that they have better health as much as possible.
Okay, and is this documentary completed or is it a work in progress?
Work in progress. We're going to start shooting in October, and then once that's done, it will be launched in January and be premiered at Derby Quad, which is the biggest film place in Derby to promote films like that.
That's fantastic. It's so insightful and heartwarming to know that there's people like Danielle out there willing to document our elders' history, don't you think, Patrick?
Absolutely, and yes. I think it's important because it's, I mean, I know Derby, I've got family in Derby,
yes.
And I think often when you think of Windrush stories, it's always like SW9.
Yeah.
but it's actually, there's other stories around the country, so I think it's having that regional voice,
yeah.
I think it's really, really critical.
Yes, it's important.
And also the other thing, I mean, I've worked with Desmond and with Clive around the whole stuff around Windrush as well.
Yes.
What more do you think needs to be done to make sure that we can preserve the legacy of the Windrush generation? Obviously, you're doing something around the documentary. What should be happening more at a national level to preserve the Windrush story and legacy?
I think what more could be done is, Dr. Desmond was talking about doing campaigns, not just in the East Midlands area, but it needs to be done within London, other regions within the UK. That way the message can be really strong and heard, and let the government know that, look, something needs to be done. It's not just has to be like in Birmingham. Like I said, the more voices we get, the more people reach out and do something and stand up for that case will be better and more powerful. So definitely more campaigns need to be in place.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I mean, for you, was there anybody in your family who was directly affected by the scandal, or any friends?
Relatives who are part of my grandma's church were affected, and they didn't know what to do. Mm. And I had to point them to Dr. Desmond, and he helped them out as soon as he could. And it's still an ongoing process. Dr. Desmond has a lot of people complaining and coming to him. He can only do so much, which is why he's partnered with organisations like the West Indian Centre. So if we have any elders in our group who are affected, or anybody connected to Dar West Indian Centre, we can point them to Dr. Desmond and other partners that he has to deal with their claims.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Okay, and where can our listeners reach you online?
You can reach me via Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Danielle Vassell, and I'll be happy to connect with you there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great speaking to you. We look forward to seeing your documentary when it comes out.
Thank you.
Looking for the premiere.
Yes, you can come down.
Patrick wants red carpet treatment.
Yes,
of course. I don't want red carpet treatment. But we want to support it anyway, definitely.
Yeah.
Of course. You guys can both come and support.
Yeah.
Lovely to have you.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for coming in, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to The Voices of Windrush with Sinai Flary and Patrick Vernon, with our special guest, Danielle Vassell.
Colourful Sinai and Patrick on Colourful Radio.
Joining us on the line is Erica McInnes, who is going to be telling us how she is going to help preserve the Windrush legacy.
Hello, hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Can you please introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Yes, my name's Dr. Erica Mapule McInnes. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I specialise with working from an African-centred perspective. So it's looking at the same problems that people may look at from a Eurocentric perspective, but often adding an African-centred outlook on things, which sometimes leads our community to a way of healing and transformation, and not just recovery, but even resilience building.
Right. And then in your eyes, what sort of things should our Windrush generation and their descendants be doing to help with their mental well-being?
One of the things we need to do is try not to just brush it under the carpet and just carry on. I think there's a great tradition within our Black communities of just soldiering on and carrying on to the next situation. And what tends to happen is there's a cumulative effect of lots of micro traumas as well as macro traumas as well. And then they can all build up, and then they can lead to overrepresentation in our community of things such as mental health problems, anxiety, depression, and physical health problems such as strokes, cancer, high blood pressure, diabetes. And some of it is to do with us just soldiering on. So I think we need to actually take time out and kind of like reflect on what's happened to us and just pause for a moment. And there's a variety of ways in which we can do that.
Okay, could you tell us some of those ways that we could do that?
Yeah. One way that I've recently really got into, and a number of the clients I work with have got into, is using a mindfulness approach and even meditation. So really just being able to take time out and do a meditation. Some people may do a prayer, and that may suffice for them. As well as that, some people do meditation and have a mindfulness approach to life. So it may be about taking time out with nature, having cycles of high performance, but also cycles of deep rest and recovery. Because quite often the body can get stressed if it's just one thing after another. As soon as we achieve one thing, or we find ourselves having fought one battle, we move on to the next battle. And that can be quite wearing on the system. So, some of our Black communities are suffering from combat fatigue because they've just been at it for so long. So mindfulness and meditation is one option. I've recently been running emotional emancipation circles where they've been about developing resilience skills. And that involves learning emotional wellness skills, which can be a bit of anxiety management, depression management, but also how do you find out what appeals to you in life and how do you keep on doing the things that bring you joy, make you feel well, put you in touch with your spirit and help your spiritual development and your spiritual self stay well. And often that can be linking to the best of our African culture and looking at the strategies that have been used in the past to keep us going.
Okay. I'm going to bring in Patrick for a question.
Hi, Erica. I know that also you've been working on a number of, you've created your own product around cards, which I think might be useful around the context. Do you want to explain a bit about that?
Yes. Well, I developed Know Thyself Adinkra cards, and it's 50 Adinkra symbols conveniently packaged into a deck of cards. And they can be useful for getting to know yourself. The Adinkra symbols originate from the Ashanti and the Akan people of West Africa. So if we're saying that we want to use healing methods that are appropriate to our culture and our culture of origin, using the Adinkra symbols, and they're put together in a pack of cards. On the front of them is the traditional word for what the symbols mean, as well as in English. And on the back of each card is an explanation. But I often ask people, what does that mean to you? So, for example, there's greatness in the card. If somebody randomly pulls out the greatness card, I say, well, what have you done that's great today? Or what great things lie ahead of you? Because it may be about how do you manifest rather than to worry about the future. How do we think of what could go well? Some of the symbols, they're very relevant to our community in terms of there's a symbol for the universe, there's a symbol for the protection of God, and also the supremacy of God, because our community is often, if not religious, very spiritual. Symbols such as humility with strength. And I find a lot of clients use them for meditation, but even not clients, people use them for personal development and optimizing themselves. So I suggest that people often purchase a pack of the cards and use them as an ongoing daily tool, and as well as for your own development, when people are doing workshops, they can use them as icebreakers, put them on the chairs and ask people to pick up their card and look at the card and ask people to talk about what that means to them and what they think of when they think of that card.
That's fantastic, Erica. So where can people get in touch with you to purchase some of these cards?
Yes, well, Know Thyself Adinkra cards are available from, they're on Amazon, they're on Etsy, they're on eBay, but you can also get them from my own website, which is www.nubiawellnessandhealing.co.uk. So that's nubiawellnessandhealing.co.uk, and they're the cards there for you.
Fantastic. Erica, thank you so much for joining us on the line discussing how Windrush generation people and also their descendants can preserve their mental well-being.
Okay, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Colourful
Sinai colourful, and Patrick colourful, on Colourful Radio.
Joining us on the line now is Nigel Guy, who's going to be telling us all about the Windrush flag that he's created. Can you please introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Okay, well, my name's Nigel Guy. I'm based in Yorkshire, in Bradford, and I'm part of a group called Windrush Generations Bradford UK, and our organisation is there to celebrate and commemorate the journeys and stories of the Windrush generation.
Okay, now I've heard you've created a Windrush flag. What can you tell me about this?
Now, I have to start by saying, in terms of I have created, yes, I've been involved, but there's been many other people involved in the development of this flag. And we call it, in terms of the Windrush generations, our mantra is about we're standing on the shoulders. And we're standing on the shoulders of the Windrush generation. And, you know, the generation that are here, the younger generation, we need to acknowledge our elders and what they've done, the journeys and sacrifices they have made. And that led us to actually design an emblem and a logo in recognition and acknowledgement of the Windrush generations. And we've got our line about standing on their shoulders, but the kind of initiative that we're wanting to do now nationally, because we've looked and seeked out, doing it locally for ourselves, but wanting to do it nationally so there's a recognition nationally that people can see something raised. So we called it Raising the Standards for Windrush. Because, in a sense, when you raise a flag, you're raising a standard, and that's what flags are known as. But obviously, it has a double meaning in terms of us actually, raising the awareness and the recognition and the struggles of the Windrush generation.
Okay. And can you describe to me what this flag looks like?
Well, the flag, it's like a triangular flag, in a sense of its relux form. It's a triangular with a curved edges. And it represents the journey of our people, not necessarily in terms of just purely the Windrush generations, but our ancestors before. And the artwork for the Windrush generation, Standing on the Shoulders flag, it's a design that is creatively based on one of the iconic images signifying the Empire Windrush as it was docking into the London's port in terms of June 1948 on June the 22nd. Now, we've got six main primary colours trying to encapsulate the countries and the nations that have been involved in terms of the stories over the many centuries in terms of there, and also, locally in terms of this century. And it's really there to have a greater meaning, respectively convey the historical and nautical journey of the people's heritage through three continents. So it's why the triangular shape of the Windrush emblem that we've done, which has kind of an artistic impression of the Windrush ship and with the logo of 1948 to signify that significant year of the travels of our people. But also the flag has a greater meaning in terms of the sacrifices and the journeys, the sacrifices of people being forced to come to different continents, and also the choices that people have made. So in a sense, we're giving a modern context to it, but also an historical context to the journey of our people.
And actually, my co-host Patrick Vernon's just sent me a picture of the flag with you and him. Okay. So I can actually see it. And it is very, very striking, actually. Where would you like to see these flags placed? And I mean, how would someone like me go about getting one?
Well, the flags, what we're trying to do in the sense of we're writing to many organisations with a request to establish if the organisations and local authorities would be willing to sponsor and adopt a Windrush flag so it can be raised in a civic area or a ground during the 21st to the 30th of June 2020 and all subsequent years. And if we can't even actually, fly it for Black History Month, because, the journey of our people needs to be remembered not just only one month, but obviously throughout the year as well. So we're trying to work with local authorities, international agencies and local groups up and down the country. So we're writing to people who are key movers and shakers, community champions and councillors who represent our communities, or those who have empathy for the journey of our people, to see if they can lobby their local authorities so it can be raised, so people can come and be partake in a civic ceremony in their town and city, showing the local authorities or their town and city acknowledge the Windrush generation. Now, people can actually, if they want to find out more information, they can go onto our website, which is www.windrushgenerations.co.uk, or they can contact me on my email address, which is, my email address, but in terms of the Windrush Generations email address, which is windrushgenerations@outlook.com.
Great. Nigel, I love your flag, and I met you up in Preston recently and displaying the flag for the launch of the Windrush Preston organisation. As you know, I've already written to in London to about three local authorities, Hackney, Croydon and Lambeth, to see whether they would see if they could take that forward. So I'm 100% behind your project. And also, just to let you know, in the studio, I am wearing your T-shirt, which reflects the Windrush flag. So I am wearing a T-shirt, and I've worn it quite a few times. So hopefully this will kind of help raise the profile of what you're trying to do.
trying to say is that this is not purely because it's been designed in one place. This is a flag that we're hoping can be universally accepted up and down the country. We're also working, engaging with high commissioners throughout the UK, but also some of the parliaments in the West Indies. We've made links with the Jamaican Parliament and cross-party from the PNP to the JLP. They've been wearing the emblem and the badge since last year, and we were hoping to have the flag raised in Jamaica in a civic area with the Prime Minister and his ministers and other people. But by virtue of the previous Prime Minister dying, they couldn't raise the flag at that particular time. So we're working on that as well. So we're hopefully by next year, the Jamaican government and also other governments will acknowledge the a raising of a Windrush flag. I know that was in the sense of moving this forward, it's about getting people together and actually seeing that, you know, there's an acknowledgement of the journeys of our people. And that's what it's about. It's about us raising an awareness. And this is a simple thing to do and something that we can embrace. And it's not too costly. It really isn't. It's just a one-off payment for people to do that. And, there's no profit being made in this. It's just purely the production of the flag and getting it raised. And it's just the willingness of people to see this happen, not just the high-powered people, but also the community. And the community, if they can get behind it, to get their local councillors and MPs to kind of ensure this is happening, because we've had MPs wearing the badges, you know, in terms of the emblem that you're using on your T-shirt that you've got, but the colour one that's been given by politicians as well. So they've been wearing it, but more needs to be done, and the work and the support that you're giving as well, Patrick, and others is welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us on the line, Nigel, and we wish you all the best with the production and the distribution of your Windrush flag.
Okay, thank you very much.
Colourful Sinai and Patrick on Colourful Radio.
The voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon, discussing how we can preserve the Windrush generation legacy through community organisations and events. In the studio is Dimani Jules Carbon, who is a consultant, and also in the studio is Kashane Davis, who is a mixologist. Welcome.
Thank you.
I want to start by asking you both, how did you both feel when you heard about the Windrush scandal?
Well, I was very disappointed. Somewhat not surprised, but very disappointed, because it felt as if we had been led to believe that our elders would be respected and they would be acknowledged for the knowledge and the contributions that they've made, and that simply didn't happen. And when this scandal came out, there was a lot of people who had that moment of realization that actually we're in a different position than we think we were.
And for you, Dimani?
Yeah, I feel like very disrespectful, of course, but also we just need to be ready. We need to be ready for anything, you know. At the end of the day, the UK is not our native country. So we need to be ready to whatever it takes, basically, for us and for our generation as well, to be able to say, you know what, we're not necessarily just going to be relying on the UK, but also we need to be men and women of the universe. So we need to be able to say, you know what, we can, you know, settle here in the UK. We can also settle at home in Africa and also in the Caribbean. So it's disrespectful, but I feel like we need to be ready just in case may take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, did any of you have any family or friends that were affected?
I had people that we knew of. They didn't have the experience of being either excluded, losing their jobs or anything like that directly. But there is something that happens in the ether, which is just about as when one of us is hurt, we feel it because our connection is quite strong. So it did feel as if my parents, my uncles, my aunties were also being abused in that very public way as well at the same time.
And I directly, again, didn't have, it wasn't necessarily a problem for my family directly. But again, you know, watching the news and listening to obviously different radio podcasts, it affected me as well, you know, definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, how do you think we can preserve the Windrush legacy so that their sacrifice and experiences and contribution to making this country what it is today doesn't go, is not forgotten? What do you think we could do?
So I think what's important is about unity. in terms of in the African Caribbean culture. Also, I think entrepreneurship as well is going to take us to the next level, and also ownership as well, you know, owning this in terms of what we want to get into and being the people and decision makers. So all of the work and the sacrifices that our sort of our family members have done to come from the Caribbean over to the United Kingdom, it's not gone to waste.
Yeah, and I mean, for you, Kashi.
Yeah, I'd add to that. I mean, I think one of the other things that we can do, which is a very practical thing, is to actually understand what happened, understand what that the experience of migration was, and also recognise it through collecting some of the knowledge that they gained over their lifetime and actually preserving that. It's a source of real anxiety to me that as we go from one generation to another, a lot of the knowledge and the experience is actually being lost. And that's something that drives, certainly I'll talk a bit more about that in terms of why the rum and why do I treat it in a particular way.
And I think also additionally, I think it's about having that conversation as well, as Shane said, you know, it's that conversation between different generations. You know, I'm 22 years old myself, so it'll be completely different what we're experiencing to what our generation before and even before that would have been experiencing. So having that conversation is very important as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to push back on that quite gently, because I think there is something that I think is a truism, that experiences as they go from generation to generation do change. You're absolutely right about that. But I would also point to the fact that if you look at the outcomes are staying quite consistent across generations. So an outcome of, you know, contact with the criminal justice system, mental health services, employment, the outcomes are staying quite consistent. I think the packaging and the presentation is actually quite different.
It's definitely a cycle, absolutely.
So, Damani, I've worked closely with the REACH Society for many years, and they've been doing fantastic work and mentoring young black boys and girls, creating career opportunities and learning opportunities. You're one of their graduates, aren't you, from the REACH programme? And that, in many ways, that is one of the legacies I see of the Rinse Generation, the work of REACH Society. Can you explain to our viewers what you got out of the REACH programme and how has that helped you in your own personal development and career as a young man?
I'll start from the beginning. I was being tuitioned by a company called Q Tuition, Kenesha Watson's her name, and REACH Society were actually looking for scholarship people to go to scholarships. So they had interviewed a few people, but it didn't quite happen. So I remember I went to one of the society fairs. I know you spoke as well. I remember you spoke. Was it 2 years ago? I
think a couple of years ago.
Yes, I remember. This was in St. Paul's. And I remember Dr. Neil, who's one of the founders, he actually was on the stage and he said, put your hands up if you want to, you know, if you feel like you can go and get a scholarship. At that moment, Patrick, I left. I said, you know what, it's not for me. I said, yeah, it's not for me at all. Now, having that sort of mentality that scholarship wasn't for me, I thought I had to have 10 languages, I had to, you know, play 15 instruments basically and have 20 A stars. Do you know what I mean? Had a very, very unrealistic kind of objectives in that sense. But I went for it. And we went through the system and I became their first recipient of the scholarship. So I went to UCFB. I did a course called International Football Business and I graduated last year. So throughout that, now for me, there's no limits. Do you know what I mean? So when people are saying, you know, you got to go and do this to go and achieve this, you know, even me saying I want to be a man of the universe, I don't necessarily just want to settle in the UK. I want to also have my business in Africa. I also want to go Caribbean, Middle East, etc. So that mentality wise, that was for me the biggest, for me to see black men as well, not just in the sports, the entertainment and as criminals. That's a very powerful image for young people. So that's how it benefited me, definitely.
Okay. Do you think there's been a history of black entrepreneurship in Britain? Can you point, is there anything that you've learnt from through that experience, or do you wish there was more information about black entrepreneurs? And with that, because obviously your path is about entrepreneurship, isn't it?
Absolutely. But also, even if there isn't necessarily recollection of black entrepreneurship, which there is, I feel like it's also important that we create the career path. So for example, I'm in the football industry. Now, there's a lack of black managers, for example, but there is no black owners.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean? So how do we expect to reach the boundaries or even surpass the boundaries if we're not owning anything? Do you understand where I'm coming from? Mm-hmm. So even if black entrepreneurship is doing live and well, Oswald Boateng, for example, is one someone that I look up to in terms of him bringing sort of African and the sort of European suits together. And he's also on Savile Row as well, which he's done very well to get to. Mm. And also in the entertainment business as well, you've seen a lot of young black men that are doing a lot of things, but they're also bringing on their people. For example, Santan Dave, he's made a song called Black. Mm-hmm. And that obviously that received a lot of backlash from a lot of people, because when people are looking at hip hop and everything like that, they want to hear about black on black crime. But when it comes to black beauty or Akala actually said this a couple of weeks ago when he was having a conversation with Kano, there seems to be a problem there. But if we carry on surpassing the boundaries and we don't actually have any obstacles, we actually see boundaries, then that's when we can really become a superpower that we deserve to be. We can be on that level of what Jewish people do. We can be on that level of what Asian people do and contribute as a community. Yeah. I feel like in pockets, we're contributing here and there. Yeah. But I think once we come together, that's when we'll make magic.
It's a game changer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, for you, Kashane, you've created a series of alcoholic drinks which are inspired by the Windrush generation. Please tell us more about these special rums.
No, you call it rum. You call it rummy.
No?
No, he's made something special out of the Windrush generation, because I would say alcoholic drinks, it's like you're thinking of your vodkas, your G&Ts.
It's not vodka.
No, but it's something more special than that, sure.
Okay. So, well, thank you so much, co-host, for just interrupting me. I love Patrick. He's always keeping me on my toes. But no, I mean, your alcoholic drinks, I mean, they're inspired by the Windrush generation. What can you tell us about your special, very, very special rums?
Well, the best way for me to tell you about the rums is for me to try, for you to try them. And I'm going to ask Patrick if he will.
I'm sure he won't mind.
I'll do it for the radio show.
Just for the radio.
And after, I'm sure.
If you can taste it. Now, whilst Patrick is doing the first of three things, remember, Patrick, there are three stages. Mm-hmm. There is the aroma.
Yeah, the aroma.
There is a taste on your palate, and then there's also the finish.
Okay, so for listeners, I've got a nice well-cut glass with some rum in here. I'm smelling the aroma. Just taking it in. This is the pineapple one.
That's the pineapple.
Pineapple one, yeah. Taking it in. And
I love the bottle.
Do you want to just describe it for people?
Yeah. So it's a nice clear bottle, and the rum actually is like a really light yellow pineapple, and the name Rumbunctious, have I said that right?
Rumbunctious.
It says Caribbean infused rum. What can you tell us about this one?
Well, in terms of the connection, why did I decide to do this? I mean, I've been passionate about rum for some time. Was observing the change in the industry that was the rum industry, that was certainly either focused around the themes of rum as pirates, and certainly we weren't the pirates they were talking about. There was rum in terms of the provenance, in terms of where it's come from, and that plantation history, and the third area, which is more something that's coming through more now, which is about rum and place. So in terms of it comes from this particular place. Now, in all of those things, I was surprised to see that the way in which the rum, the stories around rum were actually disappearing, or they were not really featuring. And infusions was something that I was always interested in, but didn't really understand. So I started on a journey to understand what that was about. And if you can cast your mind back and think about going into an older aunt's uncle's house and seen a bottle of rum with some form of bush or some sort of root inside it. Mm. That's called an infusion. And the infusions are quite important because that's quite old knowledge. It's old knowledge because it's about how we, as a community, were able to treat ourselves because there was knowledge about the different essential components that were in the roots or the fruits or whatever it was that was in the bottle that was used to treat different ailments. So if you think about the whole concept of what an aperitif is or digestives, these were things that were originally treatments. And it's that movement from, say, the pharmacy to the dinner table, which happened over time. And it's a combination that I'm particularly interested in. So in our communities, a lot of this knowledge about what are the different things that you would infuse into alcohol to for a medicinal purpose is a really interesting story and is also quite old knowledge that is being lost. So my particular passion is about making really nice tasting drinks, of course, but also about capturing that old knowledge about what do you mix with what for what purpose. Now, the thing for me is that rum, the real passion that I have is about the stories inside the bottle and around the bottle. And many of these stories I'm now capturing through interviews and putting them on my website. I'll give myself a shameless plug here. It's rum infusion stories. Infusedrumstories.com. Please have a look at that. You can see my blog, and you can also see over the next few weeks I'll be putting up the first stories. But it's a really interesting way to understand and understand our story that can be captured in rum.
Fantastic. Patrick?
So I've just tried your pineapple infused rum and I really enjoyed it. And what evokes to me drinking this, I do love my rum, and I remember meeting you some years ago at the rum festivals. And
that's right,
and,
yes.
You know, so I just love different types of rums. But this one kind of ironically reminds me of my childhood. It reminds me of fruit punch.
Yeah.
And didn't have rum in my fruit punch, obviously, as a child. Obviously, that tops social service, what I have to say about that. But it kind of it takes me back to a period of time when I did have bits of rum as a teenager, and I did like to mix it with fruit punch. And it kind of brings in this kind of glow of pineapple, fruit punch, and being a teenager and listening to, you know, a bit of dub music and stuff like that. That's what it kind of brings back memories.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to capture those individual personal stories. Rum needs to, in my view, be much more democratized. People can create their own infusions and they can infuse them with their own stories. Yeah. Mm. So things that mean something to each individual, you can do this at home. You don't need to be, you don't need to have a large outfit behind you. It's something you can do, and you can use it as a way to capture stories and bring those stories on to the next generation.
So why is it that, because I've been to rum festivals and I've been to rum tasting stuff, and it's always given this impression that it's a hip, urban rum thing, and it completely, almost like the Windrush story, or even the Caribbean, apart from you might bring the odd pirates in, that's it. There's no connection. I mean, is that a reflection of what the globalisation of the rum and beverage industry, because even all the top brands in the Caribbean are not even owned by us now.
No. Yeah.
They're all part of multi-million pound conglomerates, and they're just using the brand of the Caribbean when it's appropriate.
Yes. No, that's true. I think that's something that happens in lots of global businesses, because that's the way that they make their money, and you know, margins in rum are small, so the money is actually made through the volume of rum that is sold. And I think there are other options, and that's what I'm particularly interested in terms of that. And you're right, I was working as a brand ambassador for a Grenadian rum called Westerhall. Mm. It was a rum that I grew up with, not as a drinker, but certainly it was what I saw older people drinking. Mm. It wasn't something that was associated with with a younger person who was born and brought up in Yorkshire, as I was. So that there has been a lot of change, and there has been a lot of moving away from that Windrush, that Caribbean, that historical story, because the story of rum comes with a lot of pleasure, but it also comes with a hell of a lot of pain.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think is really important is that we embrace both sides of that. And it's the learning that we get and the wisdom that we can pass on from one generation that's really important. Mm. Now, Patrick, if you'll indulge me, I'm going to give you one more taste.
I'm doing my best here. I don't mind being indulged.
So what one is this that Patrick's trying now?
Now, this is one which doesn't yet feature on my site, but it's a hibiscus and ginger infused rum.
Okay.
And it's something that I'd really like your view on, Patrick.
Oh, I love the smell.
And hibiscus is the plant where you get sorrel, isn't
sorrel,
it?
Sorrel, yes.
I can smell the sorrel. I can just smell... This is. I love sorrel. Okay.
And can I just ask you, while Patrick is tasting your hibiscus
rum... I'm still tasting.
What? You're still tasting, yeah. Why the name rumbunctious? How did you come up with that name?
That was a name that I came up with when I was just thinking about some of the joyfulness that rum invokes. It's very much a drink that people get together, they spend time with each other, and sometimes people get a little rumbunctious once they've imbibed. But it's part of certainly part of our culture. And I always imagined people sipping a rumbunctious drink and playing some dominoes and firing a shot now and again and telling a story or having a story told to them.
Right.
I really enjoy this one. This is very sophisticated. Mm. I'm not saying the pineapple one I had before wasn't good, but you know, there's different types of drinks for different types of occasions.
Yes.
So this one, it would be like after a, you know, nice meal, just drinking at home, just chilling out. This is a type of really, it's like a nightcap. I feel like it's a nightcap drink, yeah. Maybe. That's what to me.
A bit like a digestive.
Well, yeah, basically, yeah. Like, a, you know, yeah. Yeah, so I like this one, definitely.
Good.
The pineapple one is like a fun drink. You can have it in the daytime. And I was at the Jerk Festival that took place quite recently, and that's the kind of thing, you have some jerk chicken, have that, and have a laugh, and you know, just. But this is something that you want to reflect on. You've had a hard day at work, you're drinking this, and you're thinking, yeah, let me just reflect.
And ginger is very good for the digestion,
yeah.
And it's one of those things. Now there are nuggets of information that I'm sure we all have about why would you drink or eat certain herbs, spices, or whatever. Now that knowledge is actually what I'm trying to imbibe into the drink, so that the stories that I'm collecting, the interviews that I'm having with the older generation, and I did one just 2 days ago with a gentleman, a Barbadian gentleman, whose wife suddenly pulled out a bottle of rum with gully root in. Mm. Now, we had a wonderful conversation about that, and I'm going to be putting it up on my website once I edit it. But that's a really useful and important story. And now there are going to be thousands of those stories, and I'm really keen for people to get in touch with me to actually, you know, either tell me their stories or to invite me to record their stories.
Can I ask the minor question? I know you've been you're a teetotaler, and that's good. That's a good virtue. I wasn't at your age at the time, I have to say, when I was a student. But do you think there's an attraction to rum for young people? Or is it rum is no different to, if they aren't drinking, it's no different to Bacardi, not Bacardi, gin, or maybe it's beers and different types of pails and different types of beers. Because also there's a growth in the UK of different types of homemade beers and breweries. Do you think rum fits into that? Is this a young person's drink? Or they say, oh, it's for the old folks, it's got nothing to do with me, unless it's mixed in with a punch or maybe a Bacardi type thing, maybe.
I think it all depends on how it's marketed, in my opinion. A lot of things that are always coming back into fashion, etc. Yeah. You know, you're seeing things that were probably, for example, fashion-wise, worn in the 70s, and now you see young people wearing it now.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the trainers, the platform boots, etc. So yes. I feel like the way alcohol can be marketed and it can appeal to young people, then it can be. But from times I go out, I don't usually hear people, young people say, do you know what, let me go and get some rum. I don't usually hear that, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah.
But as I said, if it can be marketed, if Kashanas can market it to young people, then that's a huge market in that sense.
I mean, if you look at the rise of gin, which was quite meteoric over the last, nearly 10 years, gin sales are becoming quite flat. It's revolutionized over that period. It started off as a particular type of gin. Then there were botanicals that were added, which are effectively infusions. Now, gin sales are actually going flat, and the predictions for rum sales are going to be around about 12% increasing for the next 7 years. Wow. That's just a prediction. Now, so I think that we've got that as the context, but the other part of that is rum has a particular meaning for people, which is very located in our personal stories. And I think, you know, there is a Windrush story in there. So for some people, this will resound. For other people, it won't resound in the same way. But I think if you see this as an opportunity to create your own stories about your own time and your own infusions and the ingredients that mean things to you, then that is a different way to actually see rum as something which can bridge a gap across generations and also across different types of people. Not everyone's going to have a Windrush story, but certainly they're going to be able to understand it as a story of their family or of their village or of their area. As something which makes sense to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you said there's going to be a trend, more and more people drinking rums, who's going to benefit from that financially? So going back to your point, more about business opportunities, can you see some young people saying, hey, here's a business opportunity, I'm going to create my own brands of rum or be part of the distribution process of marketing around rum? Or do you think it's not for them?
Do you know what? I feel young people, especially today, there's no limits now. I feel like the hard work's been done from those who've come from the Caribbean. Mm. I mean, my grandparents came from Dominica in the late 60s.
Like a fed.
Sacafet, yeah, absolutely.
It's a family connection coming here. It feels like it.
We could be family members, you never know.
We'll talk later.
Well, if you're family members with Kashane, you could be family members of me.
There's a triangle. Yeah. What about yourself, Patrick? Are you not in it? Or?
I could be. I mean, I am now.
I'm adopted Dominican.
Okay. Well, you're still welcome into the family.
Thank you.
No problem about that. But yeah, I feel like if there is an opportunity that is, especially if it's an untapped market as well, why not? Mm-hmm. You know, what will stop you? You know,
there's an interesting trend that I'm seeing. I was counting the amount of new rum brands that have hit the market, and so far this year, I'd counted around 14 different rum brands that have hit the market this year. So the trend is certainly there.
And that's quite a niche as well, isn't it?
It is quite a niche. But going back to Patrick's point, the ownership of that really is not sitting within our community.
I see.
So I think it's really important that we do think about, you know, how do we spend our black pound and what businesses do we support, but also which are the ones that actually are going to embed themselves in the Caribbean and be reinforcing to the Caribbean. And to our identity and our sense of belonging and all those things that we need to feel as if that we can do anything and that we can make all the differences that we need to make.
I feel that we're very marketable people, black people. Very, very marketable. But as soon as exactly what Kashane says, for that, who's behind, who's actually making the real money, who's actually the decision maker, and it's not us. And I think this is what I was saying earlier. I think that's where we need to be. And we can be there. But I feel like we need to get into those positions.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to ask you, Damani, what would you like to see the younger generation do to honour their Windrush heritage?
So as I said before about having the conversation, because I feel like we as young people, we don't really have the conversation. Like I had a conversation with my grandma about this was actually this year. So, and I'm 22. Do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I didn't even know that, you know, the reason why black people voted Labour, for example, I didn't even know about it. I didn't know the kind of living conditions that they had to have. I knew about the marketing of UK because they said that, you know, the streets are painted with gold and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't actually know the nitty gritties of what they had to go through, the sacrifices they had to make. So when we say that we're in trouble or we've got worries, we haven't really got worries, you know, compared to what they had. So I think as young people, firstly, I think it's about the conversation needs to be had, firstly. And secondly, I feel like when everyone came from the Windrush, it was that kind of unity and that kind of collective kind of mindset that we had. And I feel like because there's so many things going on, I think we get drags over here, drags over here and drags over there. So it's about also knowing about our history as well. And still being able to go into different cultures and learn about different cultures. But instead of changing, we need to adapt, if that makes sense. Because when we can adapt, we still know where we come from. Mm-hmm. We can also adapt to other cultures. But if we change, then we completely lose our culture. So I feel like young people, we need to have that conversation and we need to learn how to adapt. And I feel like if we can do those two things, then owning our own run business, owning a football club, owning whatever it is, I think will come very easy because when we get to that position, we're not going to forget about how it was before, if that makes sense. Mm. But still being able to diversify ourselves within different hot pots as well.
Yeah. I mean, Kashane, I mean, you've come with your rums. What has been the reaction? I mean, we've had Patrick's reaction to the rums and Damani, you know, seems very inspired by you starting your own rum business. But what has the wider public had to say about your rums?
Well, it's still developing, to be honest. I've done a couple of public tastings. I've done a few public events where I've invited people to come and taste. Not surprisingly, I spent quite some time developing the flavours of the initial rums that I'm starting with, and the first one that I hope to get out to the larger market is going to be a tamarind infused rum, which I'm really looking forward to. Tamarind is a great something to infuse into the rum because of the potential flavor profile, but also the intrinsic benefits and the health benefits that are associated with tamarind, because it's anti-inflammatory. There's a range of different things that come along with tamarind as that. And some of my experience of talking with people in the Caribbean, actually up in Trafalgar in Dominica. Okay. To them about tamarind that registered in my mind and thought, actually, I should do something with this. And that was, 20 years ago. Wow. I had that conversation. But it was something which I was really impressed with, that local knowledge about what these fruits can actually do, that made me think, when I was looking at content for rum, that this was something that I could do. But in terms of the experience, people have generally been very positive about it. And I think because it's not just a flavour, it's also a story. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is my real strength in this particular rum.
Yeah. I mean, I think the story behind it, the knowledge of the actual ingredients that go in it, I think that's a real USP in terms of your rum brand. And I wish you all the best with it. I'm sorry I couldn't taste any, but I know plenty of rum drinkers who I'll be sending your way.
I'll taste it for you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Patrick will have my share. Before you both go, where can people reach you online if they want to reach you about your rums? Or even for you, Damani, if people want to get in touch with you, you seem like a very inspiring young man. And it's not very often, you know, people like you get the limelight. Young black men are always in the news, in the media for the wrong reasons. So I feel like this is a great way for people to get in touch with you if they need any sort of tips, motivation, even you connecting with other young people.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm actually a business owner myself as well. So I own a sports management consultancy with two other gentlemen.
Fantastic.
We're trying to do a charity project as well called Breaking the Wall, because we see a lot of obstacles in the BME community and discrimination, Islamophobia, etc. Breaking into the real estate market, and also a consultant for a luxury alternative assets company. So I'm just trying to diversify myself as possible. As I said, there's no limits whatsoever. But I mean, I'm on Instagram, d.julescarbon. I can definitely give my personal email address and phone number. very reachable, because I feel like it's very important that young people understand that there are no limits. There really and truly are no limits. No matter if you're going into a workplace and you don't see a single person that looks like you, embrace that. You have to embrace it, because you need to make sure that you get your foot in the door. And then it's very important for the next generation before you, or the next young people coming before you as well. Because there's a lot of people that are in industries that I have no idea about. But it's all about connecting mm-hmm. the dots. So yeah, I'll be there. And as I said, I will definitely share my any other details you guys need as well.
Okay, so you can find Damani on Instagram
@d.julescarbon.
Thank you so much. And then for you, Kashane, where can people reach you online?
Well, I've only just learned about Instagram, so I have my daughters to thank for that. But you can find me on Instagram on a rumbunctious infused rum. I also have, I mentioned before, a website that hosts my blog, which is www.infusedrumstories.com. So please reach out to me through either of those routes, and I will be, if you sign up to the newsletter, then I can keep you informed of where I'm going to be, the events I'm going to be at, and also how you can order or if you'd like to arrange a time for me to come and collect your story, or your mother, your aunt, your grandmother's stories. I'd love to get as many stories as possible.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. It's been so good speaking to you both. What are these on the table? Were these for us to try before we go?
These were. What I have here is some raw tamarind.
Crack. I've made a mess in the studio.
The reason that I brought this was that I recognised that often tamarind was something that we grew up with, and you know, there were sweet tamarind balls, you know, rolled in sugar. And it was one of those things that that, you know, we were given as children, lovely to eat. But I suddenly realized that a lot of people didn't actually know what tamarind was. So possibly they'd had it in, say, an Indian curry, but not had actually seen the original fruit. So I often like to carry some with me to introduce people to try raw tamarind.
I don't want to make a mess in the studio, but I will be enjoying this. I actually love
tamarind.
Tamarind
when I have pilori. So if I go in a
Trinidadian
curry and takeaway, I have pilori, and they got like a dipping sauce.
Yes,
and
it's tamarind.
Delicious. Yes. Absolutely delicious. I'm going to try some now. Patrick, you're going to have to speak.
Don't worry. So it's really great. That,
I have more room, Patrick.
I can see that. I can see a whole range of bottles in the studio for our listeners. And definitely, I think rum is important. I mean, I think what you're doing, Kashane, is fantastic. Just say, right, I'm going to do this. I use the word, you're a rum connoisseur. I know that there's connotations around being a rum connoisseur, but I think we should own that.
Yes.
Can't we own that? Absolutely. It's not for the rich. It's not for the rich and the privileged.
Exactly. Yes.
We should own that. You know. Mm. And, I mean, actually, I can remember growing up as a kid, it was difficult to get rum. There were loads of Captain Morgans.
Yes.
Older, but to get proper rum, it was difficult to get proper rum.
Yes.
Like now, it's everywhere, literally. Yeah. And you know, and the classic is an example. Anyone's going to go to the Caribbean, make sure you bring the rum over.
That's exactly
how
we got
it. Because it was so expensive to get rum in the UK, it was worth risking hiding extra bottles in your suitcase. You know what I mean?
And
but like now, it's accessible. You can get the same price. It's the same price now, isn't it?
Listen, the reaction I've seen on people's faces at the airports when they get caught and that rum has to be taken away and poured
along with breadfruit.
Gone, isn't it? Their soul's gone with it.
Yeah, absolutely. You have been listening to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon. And today we had two fantastic guests in talking about how we can preserve the Windrush generation legacy through community organizations and events. We had Kashane Davis, who is a mixologist, and we also had Damani Jules Carbon, who is an entrepreneur and consultant. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been great being here. Thank you.
Colorful Sinai and Patrick on Colorful Radio.